message.
Great. Thank you. But I got to run. I hate you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're fine.
Just follow the beat. For real, you can feel the excitement in the air. Leave your worries behind and just forget about your cares. Grab a Frank at Fenway and see a soft game. Cause sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name. Don't forget, finding a spot shouldn't be hard.
Good morning, folks. It's Thursday, September 5th, 2013, here at the Broadway Studios. I love to say we're on Broadway here in Boston. Beautiful City Point, South Boston. Land of Goodwill Hunting and a million other great movies, The Departed, The Town, Mystic River, etc. Here in South Boston, Hollywood. And I'm waiting for my first caller. Today we got a great, exciting show with Rebecca Cushing, a good friend of mine and also a teacher of meditation, taught for years with, I don't know if we can mention the company or not, and also recently just authored a book. I see her. She's just appeared. I thought we were going to have to do some. There you are.
Hi, Tom.
How are you?
Hi, Tom. I'm good.
Good morning. How are you, Rebecca?
Good morning. I'm just fine.
I was looking at a blank studio board here and not knowing if we were going to have to do this psychically.
Oh,
but here you are.
I am.
Mm-hmm. So very excited. I was doing a little monologue on how a little background on you and how we met, et cetera, et cetera. And I mentioned that you started off that you were a teacher of meditation. Can we mention the company?
Oh, absolutely, Silva Ultramind, the work of Jose Silva.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
And that's how we met.
That's right. You were in my seminar. A couple of
exactly,
times.
And that was, oh, God, how many years ago? Man, it's like you blinked the eye.
I know. Well, I started teaching the Silva Ultramind seminar in 2004, and I remember you were in my Providence class. It was all men. That was a great class.
Yeah, it was.
In the Marriott in Providence. That was fun. Those were great guys.
I'll give my spin on a few things. You know, here I am attending this class, and I'll tell you why I had always been interested in Silva mind control. As in my early days in entertainment, I was a magician, and then was fascinated by mentalism, and I started to do mentalism, and of course, mentalism is all chicanery. And then I started to notice things happening at times in my act. I would see, say, for example, a person's house. I would start to nail the cards that people had without needing chicanery to do it, and it would just freak me out. And some people came up to me after a class and told me, at that time, Silva was a big rage. I mean, it was just everywhere in the news, and people were doing it. You know, it was really trendy. And somebody came up and said, you know, we had just completed a class in Silva Mind Control, and we thought that was the greatest exhibition of ESP that we've ever seen. And so that kind of turned me away that, you know, these people thought that I was real. And so I dismissed it. But it came back to me I was performing way up in a college, way up in Vermont, and a guy walks into me at the end of the show and he says, geez, can you tell me where to find a ventriloquist? And I'm like, yeah, I can. And I said, can I ask you why? He says, I was just walking by. He says, I'm a professor of philosophy, and I'm teaching a class in Kant. And so I said to him, Immanuel Kant, I said, oh, what, the categorical imperative? And he looks at me, and I've got rubber chickens on the ground, and I've got all these props from this comedy act, and he's kind of says, how do you know about this stuff? And so we talked a little bit. I said, well, how did you know that I would know who a ventriloquist was? Did you see the show? He says, no, I was walking by, and I just knew. I says, I just finished a course in Silva Mind Control, And he says, I wrote my entire thesis, he says, using Silver Mind Control. He says, I couldn't figure out a topic. And he says, no, he says, but I went into, I was doing Silver Mind Control at the time, and I used to go down this elevator, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, and see the floors, and then I would go to the bottom floor. And one day I got meted by these spirits who guided me down a hall into a huge library. They went over, grabbed the book, showed me the book, showed me the title, and I submitted it. It was accepted. They couldn't believe that I had come up with something because he says, and, you know, it's extremely difficult to get a topic. And he says, what I would do every single day is go down through this meditation process, and they would guide me into the library. They would open the book, and he says, I literally stole the whole, you know, thesis. He says, so, I mean, obviously it freaked me out, and obviously I was, you know, intrigued.
So that's why
you
came to the seminar. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it was years later, and I forget how, I was reaching for a book, and this is, you know, a standard story in my life, reaching for a book, and instead of grabbing the book that I want, I grabbed the latest book on Silver Mind Control that was recently updated. And then, I don't know how, if I searched you out or something, but yeah, we connected. And
you found me. Yeah.
Yeah. And so.
Mm-hmm. And that's how we met.
So maybe, what fascinated me, and excuse me for monopolizing conversation, but it's a great setup to give some validity to why, you know, we connected, et cetera. But, you know, here I am going to this class on spirituality and meditation, et cetera. And I walk in the door, and this will set it up, and there's this amazingly, strikingly gorgeous woman at the head of the class. And I'm just like taken aback and going, wow, this is a treat. I didn't expect, usually, you know, when you do things like this, you expect some earthy, crunchy, granola kind of gal up there talking about the heavens. And there you are, looking anything but, and totally attractive, stylish, and sexy, the whole thing. And then, you know, to me, that's what the listeners have to hear, because obviously you were an amazingly beautiful stewardess in the day when we could call a stewardess.
Well,
yes?
We were stewardesses. I started flying back in 1967, and it was a very competitive job to get. Everybody wanted to do it because in the 60s, there weren't the career options for women that we have today. And I was in a teacher's college. I went for 2 years, and then I thought, oh, my God, the next 2 years are going to be learning how to teach children. I wasn't ready for that. So I ended up flying away. I got a job at United Airlines, and I flew for 35 years. I loved it so much.
Wow.
But, yeah, it was back in the glamour days. I always like to say I saw the absolute best of the airline industry. And then, of course, I flew right through 9/11 because I retired in 2002, and I actually got to see the worst of it.
God, you hit that, your career span that long?
Oh, 35 years, yeah. And,
fascinating.
And I decided to leave. Mm-hmm. But the minute I started flying, I was put on a metaphysical path. It was as if my higher self knew exactly where I needed to go in order to meet teachers and have the kind of experiences that I needed to have to grow my soul and develop in this lifetime. And it was the absolute perfect vehicle for me to get on the jet because my first base was Chicago. And right after I moved into this building in Chicago, it was all stewardesses except for the guy who managed the building, Dickie. And then these two other guys moved in, and they were marketing guys who moved in specifically because they knew the building was full of stewards. Back then, they called these guys stew bums. But they weren't really bums. They were guys that made money and just liked to go out with stewardesses because, you know, they were available. They weren't stupid. But one of them became my first teacher of metaphysics because he taught me the art of creative visualization. And he told me how to visualize what I want and you know, feel like I've already gotten it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to go to New York and be based there. And so I just pictured myself, felt myself transferred to New York in a beautiful apartment, and it all happened so fast. It just kind of blew my mind, and it made me realize
Oops, the line, the air just went dead. Are you on a cell phone or are you?
Oh, I'm on a cell. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a landline?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. No, but okay, just cut out for a second. But go ahead.
Oh, okay. So anyway, that was my first clue that, you know, thoughts are things. And
right.
I've been studying metaphysics ever since. It was my first big aha moment.
When you explained the class, I think you had an incident to happen. You know, here's where we go into the people who aren't in tune with spirituality and metaphysics, you know, and would kind of dismiss this. But you were in telling me about when you were 18 or so. Well, yeah, I mean, these are important things to bring into the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're 18, you're in Fall River or someplace, and you're looking at the ocean. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I'm sitting in a car with a guy. We're looking out at the ocean, and we were both in college, and we're just sitting there looking out toward Martha's Vineyard, and this was in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and these three blinking lights started coming closer and closer and closer to the shore, and they got close enough so that we could clearly see they were three flying saucers. Saucer-shaped vehicles with little domes on top, blinking, flying together, making no noise. Got out of the car. They were hovering right over our head. And it was amazing. And I realized when I looked at these.
It sounds like a Spielberg movie. That's amazing. I didn't remember that they had actually stopped above you.
Oh, yeah. They came right up to the shore and were hovering above our head. And I looked at them and I said, I have to find out where these are coming from. Because they're coming from somewhere. And I certainly had no, idea of how they could be made in our country or the world at that point. It was the 1960s. And so that was when I decided I had to join the airlines to find out more. And I interviewed pilots my whole career to find out what they knew. And quickly found out in 1967 when I started flying that they didn't want to talk about those things because pilots had made the mistake of reporting incidents and had been actually harassed and almost forced to quit because nobody wanted to talk about it. But I was
interesting. Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
Interesting.
But that was what opened up my thought. After that experience in my teen years, my critical mind said, anything's possible. And I've always had an open mind. Not that I believe everything everybody tells me, but I am open to possibilities. And metaphysical people, I find you have to have an open mind if you want to be on the spiritual path. And
yeah, you cut out just a little bit here.
Mm.
Let's see if you come back. Okay, you just came back. Now, there was one other incident. Again, I think these are really important and significant for the rest of how the rest of the story develops. You got cancer in your 20s.
That's right. That's right. After I had gotten on the spiritual path a bit and I was using creative visualization and studying the works of Gurdjieff, he was one of my favorite teachers, Gurdjieff.
Who was it?
Who was the Russian, George Gurdjieff, a Russian mystic who lived in all over the world, actually. He lived in New York City for a time. And he had a center in Europe called Fontainebleau where he trained people to wake up. You know, that's my big theme in this life, waking up. And but I found myself in my mid-20s being diagnosed with early cancer after a routine
physical. You cut out for a second, but I'll fill in.
I'm
well,
back.
Fill it in, see if you came back here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I went through a routine diagnosed with early cervical cancer. And
okay.
I was told that if I didn't have surgery to remove my uterus, not just, you know, remove it completely in my mid-20s, I would be dead by the time I was 40. And that was not something that I chose to do. I mean, the doctor might as well have said, you know, I want to cut your head off tomorrow. I wasn't prepared in any way to do that. And I wasn't prepared to be dead by the time I was 40. So I was up against the wall. And it forced me to make a decision. All right, do you want to go material route or spiritual? This is like your crossroad. And I had heard about spiritual healing from a man who was healed of a brain tumor in Christian Science. And I thought, well, if it works for him, I'm going to try it. And I went to a Christian Science practitioner, had an instantaneous healing as she explained to me that I was the perfect child of God and perfect health with my birthright. Because I had an open mind, I was able to completely accept that that was the truth. And I can remember, like, my mind going in a nanosecond through my life and going, of course, there's no problem. You know, I was born without anything invading my body, so why would I think it would do it now? And it just totally transformed me. It was kind of one of those, you know, you can have a transformative experience when you have a healing like that. And I never worried about my body again, even though there were a couple of little things that came along, but it was always dealt with on the spiritual level eventually.
Amazing.
So that
and
was
did you, I think you told me you had gone back to the doctor and he was in total disbelief.
Well, I did have a physical a year after this healing, and yeah, there was absolutely no sign of anything. It was completely, I was completely healed. Yeah.
You know, I've heard, you know, when recounting these kind of things, you know, you just jog my memory. In all my life, my path has been to meet people like you who've had these experiences. And, you know, I know personally, I mean, I've seen the x-ray films, you know, that was my business for years, and I saw before and afters, and, you know, these amazing things do happen. And so, all right, so now jump to, good, because I think those two things are very important in your story, the UFO experience, and then, you know, which it gave you a shift in your head that, wow, all things are possible, and second of all, an actual healing. Where you went from having cancer to being free of cancer. And then the decision that, okay, now I'm going to be a flight attendant, and then you start meeting these teachers along the way.
Yeah.
And so about the book is how do you start off the book? Do you start at that point with the saucers, or do you go back to your childhood? How do you begin?
It is a memoir. So there is a little bit about my childhood. Every chapter in the book, I try to talk about something that happened to me. And some of them are pretty like getting raped is one part of it. I went and applied for a job at the Bunny Club in New York, you know, the Playboy Club. There's a chapter called Bunny Club. I mean, I was out there doing things. I had three husbands. I owned a modeling agency in New York City. I was an entrepreneur many times, different businesses. I mean, I've been out there in the world. And I wanted to share with people ways that you can be in the world. Maybe, you know, you get divorced or you're given a bad diagnosis or something terrible happens to you, but you can always overcome it. My philosophy is, from all the metaphysical things I've studied and worked with and taught, is that there's always a solution. And I wrote this book because I feel there is a shift taking place on the planet. You know, people are either opening their thought to the spiritual dimensions or they're shutting down and they, you know, they don't want to hear about it. But for those that are, you know, interested, because I know I love to read books like this myself, I'm always looking for people that have had epiphanies, transformative experiences, and how they share their stories. And that's what it is. It's another way for people to relate.
Yeah, you cut out how they share their, fill in the blanks there, how they share
their you know, spiritual experiences and their transformative experiences and what we can learn from each other. But it's a good read. The two people that have read it said, oh, my gosh, I couldn't put it down. You know, it's fun to read.
Well, yeah, and as you explained to me, it's not just metaphysical. There's some good sex in there, and there's some, you know, some other interesting anecdotes. That, or maybe you were just telling me that to get me to read it, but is that true? Do we have some encounters?
It's a real story. It's a story of, you know, I would call it, it's kind of like a cross between Sex and the City meets Bridget Jones' Diary meets Mother Teresa. How about that?
Now that'll entice a reader. So Sex and the City, Bridget Bridget Jones' Diary, and what
Bridget
was the third?
Bridget Jones' Diary, Mother Teresa.
Is that on the jacket?
No, but I might put. I just thought
it
about
should be.
Because I was trying to figure out what it is.
That,
what it
that's
really
your
is.
Elevator pitch, boy. I'll tell you that if that doesn't entice a reader.
Yeah, how about that?
Fantastic. You know, when I go back, I'm going to edit the tags and of this particular show that'll be on the internet, and I'm going to have to introduce that bit. So, Bridget Jones's Diary. That's a mouthful right there. What was
that?
Sex in the City and Mother Teresa.
Right. Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
It's all in there. It's all in there. Something for everyone.
We'll talk about a trinity. That's a trinity right there. So go ahead. So you talk about your childhood, da 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 da, da and then imagine you know you've got the book in front of you and it's unraveling. Where does it start to? Where's the turning point in the book where things start to, you know, the reader starts to understand? Oh my God, this person has really been on a path.
Well, I'll tell you, I let a man read it who owns a magazine here locally. And he's not metaphysical. He doesn't know what the word metaphysical means. And the name of the book is The Secrets of a Metaphysical Flight Attendant. But he said, but Rebecca, I couldn't put it down. He said, this book is written on different levels. He said, I just enjoyed the adventure of it, you know, the things you did, the places you went. He said, I want to see pictures of, you know, your place in New York and when you were here and when you were there. He wants to see all these pictures. I said, you know, I don't think there's going to be pictures in this book. But, you know, he really got into, you know, the story. But then on another level, it's written to help people figure out how they can truly find inner peace.
Right.
Inner peace, which is what a lot of people are looking for. And it's a very elusive thing because it seems like there's always one more problem that pops up, and if you could just solve that one, then you can have that inner peace that you're always looking for. And you and I have talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
Inner peace,
you know,
is something you can have right
as
now.
You and I have, you know, been friends now for, God, it's probably a good 8 years anyway, because I think I did take the course about 2005, 2006. And again, it was one of the things that just, you know, I always toyed with the idea, didn't have the money, but then when I saw that your course was a full weekend, and, you know, I'll give my take on the course. It was, you know, I started to see, you know, I had meditated for years. And so I was always interested in what, you know, the silver technique was, because obviously if some guy ends up writing a thesis based on his experience with it, you know, for years I was hoping those same guys that he had came to me and gave me the Great American Novel. But, you know, I just sat there in the class, and, you know, when you were using the – well, why don't you explain what the difference is when, you know, you were using the beats and
the point of the Silva training is to teach someone how to go to the alpha level of consciousness on command, which is where we think better, we have intuition, we, you know, have amazing experiences because we're using our intuition and our spiritual sense, as opposed to the beta level of consciousness, which is where most people are operating from most of the time when they're awake. So to go there on command is the realm of genius. That's where people who are able to write thesis effortlessly, or Einstein could lie down on his couch and, you know, kind of have a little semi-snooze and come up with theories and solutions to questions that he had. This is where geniuses go, and that's what it's teaching people, how to think like a genius. How to go to that level of consciousness where you can solve problems, be healed.
Right.
And,
if I can interject, how to not think is really what it teaches.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
then
right.
to open up to the universal mind or whatever label we want to give the thing that we really don't understand. And that's where all the great ideas. I laugh at people who say, well, I wrote the book. No, you didn't.
That's right.
Not when you're on a genius level. No, you didn't. You know, you heard something. And they will admit that. You know, people just talk about automatic writing, and I've experienced it, you've experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so, and so again, getting into the book, you're looking at the book, and Now, again, the stories and everything else, but when do the aha moments come? I mean, so we know you had an aha moment with the saucers. We had an aha moment, obviously, with the cure, the healing.
And then
was it when you went to actually visualize being in New York and then ended up in New York that you started to get the aha moments that, wow, you know, I really am.
Well, the UFOs were the first aha moment, I have to say. And, I mean, some people are naturally kind of like these intuitive, empath kind of people. And I think as even a kid, I mean, I had an imaginary friend who was as real as a real person.
Right.
You know, her name was Deowaya,
right.
And she lived down by the river. So, you know, people like that, I think, tend to think this way more than some other people, which, you know, it's just the way the planet is. But it doesn't stop. I mean, I'm still having aha moments in that I just signed a contract with a publisher less than two weeks
mm-hmm.
ago. And that was an aha moment because, you know, many people write books, but they never figure out how to get it out there into the world. And that's all kind of unfolding very effortlessly, too. You know, and I wrote this book with a writing partner who's a writer. It's my story, but she's the writer. And when I found her after doing a little search on the internet, I called her up, and right away she said, "Oh, I know you. I recognize your voice. We met in a shop called The Magic Mirror a few years ago, and I can remember your voice from talking to you."
I mean,
it was that kind of thing.
Synchronicity
meant to be. So if you're
right.
in the flow, everything just kind of, yeah, I always say all you have to do is get dressed and show up every day for life.
Well,
if you're in the right
true.
State.
Woody Allen says it best, 90% of life is showing up. And it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those two experiences were extremely transformative. What was another one in the book that you might have mentioned that was a mind blower?
Let's see. Well, I have three husbands mentioned in the book, and I learned tremendous lessons from all three of them because they were probably the same person in different bodies in a way. They say we always attract the same thing, but they were all uniquely different. The first husband was a drop-dead gorgeous international model, and, you know, we lived in New York City and owned a modeling agency. The second one was kind of a crazy entrepreneur. And we lived in a mansion in Newport and had a telephone company. And then the third one had a trust fund, so he never took work very seriously. And he came from a very interesting American family. He had many very famous relatives. And, you know, that kind of was another lesson in itself to see how he operated.
So you lived the jet set life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Fabulous.
Checking things out the whole time. Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, from what it sounds like now, I mean, you just, you live the kind of life that most people can't even imagine.
Well, in many ways I did, because I'll tell you, to be a stewardess in the 60s, just that alone was an experience that we lived the life, believe me. Everywhere we went, we were like the supermodels of that time because we never had to pay for anything. Everybody wanted to wine us and dine us, and we stayed in the best hotels. And all the passengers were actually, how can I say, it was an exclusive club back then to fly.
That's true.
Now
that's right.
Private.
You know, I have a saying that what is once a luxury soon becomes a drudgery.
Right.
And you know, and that the airline is, I mean, today, I mean, getting on airlines is a painful experience with all of the security and the lines and the people. I mean, they've just become nothing but bus stops, you know.
One of my chapters is called "You Might Need a Private Jet."
And why not? Exactly.
Right.
Well, listen, we got to do this. We're coming down to the half hour. I can extend the show if you wish, or we can call this a wrap and then pick it up because there's obviously much more. We've only brushed the surface. This is the tip of the iceberg on where we can go with all of this. Anything you want to cover here from this point forward on this call?
Well, I want to thank you for all the nice things you said about me. I didn't realize when you walked into my classroom you were that taken.
I did. I said something about, I figured I came out, you know, being a comedian in a flirt, I came out with some remark, and all the other heads in the class turned on me, looked at me like, what, are you crazy? You know, you don't say those things in the year 2000 plus. And, but, yeah, you are an extremely attractive woman. And again, I didn't, you know, I'm thinking we're going to go in and eat granola and have bells and chimes and Tibetan flags, prayer flags, and there was
right.
None of that.
Crunchy granola. Okay.
Yeah, you know, so instead this very attractive woman who's, you know, dressed to kill and her hair is done and, you know, has beautiful jewelry and et cetera. And I'm going, wow, this is so, I mean, I think that's an essential part of what the listener has to hear today is that, you know, this is not, you know, Rebecca's not somebody in an ashram who can, you know, who's got tons of money and, you know, can afford to have this ashram and all these followers and, you know, and yet has no base in reality. You lived a very sensual, very materialistic in a lot of ways.
Very worldly life.
Yeah, you had
absolutely.
Your feet. You
I
had
kept out a lot of
one,
things.
Yeah, you had your 2 feet in two different planes, the material plane, the physical plane, and the spiritual, and which is, you know, which is, I think, makes your story even more unique in that you were able to be grounded in both and have both of them work together, synthesize and give you an amazing life.
Well, I tell people that if there's something you really, really desire, and I love glamour and excitement and adventure and people, so I put myself out there, and I tell people, don't repress yourself. If you have a strong desire to, you know, be a singer or, you know, run away and join the circus or whatever your desire is, do it, because you have to feel like you've tried everything that you've been desiring, and I call it looking under rocks. Because usually you look under there and you find out, oh, well, it's fun, but maybe it's not exactly what I thought it would be. You know, there's an up and a downside to everything, but you got to check it out. And that's what makes people happy when they're free to do whatever they want to do and explore. And that's why we came here. We came here on a purpose, but part of our purpose
exactly.
Is
to and what do you call it?
Looking.
What do you call it?
Looking under rock.
Looking under rock. Great.
Because usually I would find, you know, a few worms under there too that would be crawling around. But I checked it out. At least I satisfied my curiosity and found out what was there. Yeah, and it's interesting, and it makes you. And then you have happy memories because you've done so many things. You can think about all these different aspects of your life. Which is kind of
great.
Fun.
Now, where can we get the book?
The book will be out. I talked to my publisher yesterday. Realistically, it will be out after the first of the year. I'm not sure exactly when. It's in the editing process right now, but it is completed. And that's the deal. It'll be published by Balboa Press, which is a division of Hay House.
Great. Well, you know, it is a great, everybody, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people talk about a book, and you're right, it's a major undertaking, it's a lot of work, and you did it, and that's one of the amazing things about today is with today's technology, you don't have to beg some established publisher. In fact, the established publishers are in big trouble because so many people can have access to the world and an audience, and you've done it. And congratulations, and I think I'm up for doing many more of these. I hope you are.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's fun. Anytime.
Okay, great. Well,
okay.
That's it. Rebecca Cushing, who, and it's the, what is the exact title?
Now, I've changed my name to my name, Rebecca Tripp. Cushing was
Tripp.
My last name. I'm now Rebecca Tripp.
Oh, okay. So now you're called. What a trip. Are you really Rebecca Tripp?
That's always been
okay,
my
so
name.
I don't call you Rebecca Cushing anymore.
No, call me Rebecca Tripp, T-R-I-P-P. And,
okay.
Yeah, that's
great.
Me.
And it's the What is it? The of a metaphysical flight attendant?
The secrets. The secrets of a metaphysical flight attendant. Right.
Rebecca, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Oh, it's fading out here, cutting out, but that's
okay.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Talk
bye.
To you the next time. Bye. That's okay. It, folks. September 5, 2013. And have a great day. Have a nice metaphysical flight.
B-Town on Lansdowne Street. You can hear the music playing, just follow the beat. For real, you can feel the excitement in the air.